Beatles?
AC/DC.
Greta Van Fleet.
Oh, yeah, that's who it is.
Yeah. Those guys. What do you think about that?
I don't have any interest in that whatsoever.
I'm really not. And they're saying, they're kind of saying, I mean, they're not quite saying it, but it's almost like, it's almost to the point of Frank Marino saying, yeah, man, I learned how to play after an acid trip. They're like, we've never heard of Led Zeppelin. We've never even heard of them. What?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Oh, Roger Plant was in a band?
Yeah, it's interesting. So this is what Discogs spat out for our intro record, and I was like, no, really? I don't even know why I have this record, but of course it's Led Zeppelin 2. It does sound awesome, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. This song always sounded awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, hang on. I got a version of me singing this in a park with kids from the School of Rock. Here, hang on, turn that off. Hang on. No, keep it going for now, because it'll be dead air otherwise.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. I can hardly wait for...
Oh, no, it was rock and roll. I didn't sing that one. Yeah.
No, see, now we're...
Sorry.
You messed it all up.
I don't even know a Zeppelin anymore.
You got my
anymore.
Hopes up and dashed them again.
Yeah.
There you go, you stupid
I don't know from a Led Zeppelin song anymore.
I don't know if I could listen to any Led Zeppelin anymore, you know? It's like, that's why I'm not interested in Greta Van Fleet. It's like, I've heard all of this.
There's some deep cut Led Zeppelin.
I like the Presence album. Yeah, Charlie Diliberti and I were talking about that the other day about, man, it's like, and I'm like, he's like, that fucking record. I'm like, dude.
It's a good
that
one.
That fucking record, you know, Achilles Last Stand, that's the way you start a record off.
Yeah.
I mean, that's epic. Bonzo, that's his best record.
Yeah,
man.
He's killing on that.
And he's got more of a funky groove. He really discovered funk and added with that flavor he already had.
Cool.
So it's really cool, man. Yeah.
Nice.
I don't think I ever get tired of that record.
Yeah, I've got to be in the mood for hearing it, but I generally wouldn't skip it as quickly as I'd skip something from this album.
I'd pop
Zeppelin
on some Nick Gilder maybe first.
No doubt about it. All right, well, let's get cracking.
Ah, crack. Wonderful. Yeah.
Release
great.
The Kraken.
Wonderful. Crack.
Well, all right, everybody. Tonight, what do you say we have a rock and roll party?
Come on, boy.
Abbey Road Records show.
Heavy metal, rock and roll is always going to be with us. Day after day, year after year, it's never going to die.
Who likes rock and roll? Yeah!
Abbey Road Records show.
Put down the boxing gloves and try and just get it together.
Well, hey, Labba!
Hey, Labba!
The Abbey Road Records show is on the air. Your hipster-free vinyl podcast. I'm your host, Ryan McKay. And now, for God and Empire, the most excellent order of shabby, please welcome, sir, you're making a scene, A.D. Adams.
That's right. Who's going to clean this fucking mess up? Anywho, welcome everyone to episode 213 of the Shabby Road Record Show.
Wow.
The music podcast that all the other music podcasts used to pants in high school. We have an incredible evening planned for you, but there's no way we're going to pull that shit off, so you're just going to have to settle. But hey, what say we get this space monkey strapped into the capsule and aim this errant projectile at the nearest black hole we can find? We got records.
We indeed have records. We got a couple of records of man, and we're going to be doling them out here and sharing some crazy stories and all that stuff that we do each and every week here at the Shab. And thank you guys very much for clicking on the stuff to find us here once again this week. And if you're new, well, enjoy the show. It's going to be pretty fun here this week. I know my mystery box is rocking balls. So find us on Facebook and Instagram and the other one, Twitter, at Shabby Podcast, and come say hi. And say hi to the notorious LDB, who's sitting there running the controls in the Shabby Command Center. Woo! Yeah. How are you, notorious LDB?
I'm great. I had a good time last night. Saw Jackal.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I've never seen him before.
Jackal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I mean, I know there was a bunch of hype about him when they first came out.
Yeah.
AC/DC.
Yeah.
And all that.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty damn good show.
I've heard good things about them.
Yeah. He did the loud as hell. I mean, standing in the back of the club, my ears were pounding.
Wait, so didn't we open up for them or was it Pete Loren Band? Was it you Super Soul Fighter? I think I opened up with, at the
you might have done it
Cajun
with,
House with Pete Loren's band.
But I wasn't. Original guitarist might have done it with you because I never did.
Okay,
that gig anyway.
It might have. Yeah. Okay.
But it was good, and he pulled out the chainsaw and did a stool, and then. Awesome. Do you know his mic stand is a shotgun?
It's a goddamn shotgun.
I do now because Mark Damian Brooks put a post out on
it. And it fires.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah. That's he fired it at the end of the
night.
Well,
if you go pull your gun out, it'll fire while you pull the damn thing out. That'll get you killed.
That was loud.
Yeah.
And scary.
Nice. Well, that sounds like a good time, actually.
Yeah, it was a good time.
They are fun.
Yeah.
It's silly. It's over the top, and they rock. They're like Black Oak Arkansas fun.
Pretty much, yeah.
There you
They're
go.
Fun like that.
They're carrying the Black Oak torch.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not all music.
Unashamedly rednecky.
Yeah, he
bikery.
Talks a lot.
Yeah, I don't give a fuck.
Okay. I'd go see that.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. I think the spirit of them is what, like, again, like a band like that. It's, it's the whole spirit
definitely.
Of it all.
Yeah, definitely.
Is it cheesy? You betcha. Yep.
Well, I know someone else that's cheesy. That, of course, is Liz's sidekick, who we call Sal5000. What's up, yo bag of bolts?
I felt the need for companionship.
Oh, so are you two dating, you and AD? Is that what's going on?
Dating.
Kiss my ass.
Oh well, she is not interested.
No,
that
no.
That is a
no.
hard pass.
I thought it meant more than that.
That one night, the tryst that we had.
Well, I'm going to hell.
And I'm going home.
Oh, man. Let's give a hearty handshake to our friends over at alltheworldsastage.net, AD Adams.
Alltheworldsastage.net, indeed. Tired of seeing everyone else's band swag plastered all over town? When's the last time you saw super hot chicks wearing tank tops with your name printed across their spectacular racks, huh? Well, don't wait another second. You can make that happen right now. The good folks at alltheworldsastage.net are experts when it comes to promotional merchandise and custom personalized items of all varieties. Swag for your kick-ass band, promotional gift items for your small business, custom t-shirts made from actual photos, like the one of your dumbass from that time you got drunk at the Rainbow and hurled on Lemmy's boots.
Oh, that was a rough night.
You remember that? I'm going to make a shirt of that. Ah, t-shirts, of course, but our pals at alltheworldsastage.net can create so much more than just t-shirts, ball caps, and stickers. They have the most incredible and wide-ranging varieties of items you'd ever want to put your logo on. Custom printed boxers, briefs, and thongs, guitar picks, drumsticks, banners, and bongs, and fully customized with your band or company's logo right there on it. So click to alltheworldsastage.net to see all the crazy shit they can make for you. And their prices? Shut the fuck up. Best prices on the interweb, Jacko. And there's never a screen charge on orders of 24 items or more. I said that again. Best prices on the interweb, Jacko. And there's never a screen charge on orders of 24 items or more. So come on, do what the pros do. Get all your custom swag at alltheworldsastage.net.
That's right, AD.
That's right, all the world's a stage.
Damn it.
.net.
Yeah, save 10% on your order if you mention Shabby Road Record Show over there. Great people. So make sure you're taking good care of, they'll take good care of you. And all of that stuff, blah, blah, blah. What AD said.
It's amazing.
All right, we've screwed around long enough. Let's go ahead and get some records out and start swapping some vinyl records back and forth around the room. Liz is grabbing the two playing cards to see who's going to go first right now as I'm talking to you. And while she's doing that, I'm going to say Jay by proxy, Justin Aylett.
Well,
he went by and got us some beer for tonight, AD.
I'm going to go grab one. You want one?
Not yet. I will have one a little later.
No, thank you.
We've got Guinness tonight, huh?
Yeah, ice cold Guinness. So thank you to Jay by proxy.
I miss our Miller High Life.
I know. I miss my... What happened to my
Miller's?
Beer?
But Guinness is way better.
You know, Budweiser turned into goddamn poison. I don't know what they put in that shit anymore, right?
Poison. You sounded like Bubbles on Trailer Park Boys.
I think I sounded like my grandmother, Grandma Walkie.
It turned into goddamn poison.
I mean, it did... And you would get headache. I couldn't drink it anymore, man. I've been drinking Budweiser since I'm like 12.
Yeah.
You know, and now you can't even drink this shit anymore. So then the Miller's like, okay, that's good. But then Started having Guinness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, thanks to Justin. We've got some Guinness tonight. He went by the website, shabbyroadrecordshow.com, and found that little PayPal link there that fills the fridge, as it says, just like that. Yay. Exactly. So thank you, Justin. Jay by Proxy. And he sent some more records my way. They're coming into a mystery box real soon. It's going to be a return of a shabby favorite.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Jay knows what I'm talking about. So we'll get that going. But for tonight, I think I'll turn it over to you, AD, to pick left or right, because I did last time.
Okay, let's do right hand. Let's do right hand.
It's got to be me.
Me.
It's Black.
Finally.
Oh, I pick you then. I pick you, sir.
I choose you. I'm going to start with this one, actually. I can't believe in serendipity. Well, we are just on the same wavelength sometimes. It freaking pisses me off.
Yeah. You stay out of my brain. I'll stay out of yours.
I don't want to. I mean, dear listener, do you want to be in AD Adams' brain? No. I don't either.
A distinct red side and a black side here. Right? That's for a reason.
You evoked this man's name in the intro with the Led Zeppelin record playing. I brought Mahogany Rush and Frank Marino. I was like, you got to be kidding me. Of all names just, to draw out of your hat.
Too weird. Well, it's not my hat. I pull it out of, if you know what I'm saying. It's my repertoire.
I have been on such a kick lately with Frank Marino and Mahogany Rush lately. I've just been pulling out all the ones I have, and I've got all the Mahogany Rush records up until 1979 or 8, I think it is.
Okay.
And I just, I don't know, just been digging them. There's something about these.
I'll get that
especially
one.
The mid-period. This is what I brought this time was 4 IV.
You know, he taught himself how to play guitar.
I know. Yeah. This is on, this is 1976
woke
now.
Woke up from a NASA trip.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, I never played 4.
What?
No.
Well, that's the lore, right? I mean, he did in fact have a horrible acid trip, and he wound up in the hospital. And in order to keep giant pink elephants from barging into his hospital room for the next 2 weeks, someone brought him a guitar, and he taught himself how to play. And that's how it was. Now the whole Hendrix thing is lore.
Spirit of Jimi Hendrix, man. While I was tripping,
right.
I woke up and I was attached to all these things, you know. And you know, the guy next to me in my hospital room had a guitar, and I never played it. I said, "Hey, can you hand me that thing?" And he said, "Let me have a go at that." Do you play? No. I said, "No, I don't play." But I felt Jimmy in me. Well, Jimmy was the intern. and then I said, "Hey, and listen, I'm trying to conjure Hendrix here. Can you get that? You know."
Oh yeah.
And so he handed me this guitar, and I soloed, man, and I started a band.
Yeah.
That's a big step.
The first solo I ever played by Hendrix was Bridge's Eyes. Day of the Eagle. All right. So there's that aspect of Frank Marino. And the other one being that he put a band together called Mahogany Rush. And that Mahogany Rush was the name that he gave to his horrible acid trip. It was like a Mahogany Rush.
Okay.
And they're like, "Jesus, dude, you're not coming back." I think he was basically sober from then on out. He was like a straight edge dude after that.
You ever lost your shit on acid, Ryan?
No, I've never done any acid ever.
Sometimes you just go, "I don't want to go back there again."
Yeah, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
So he finds a drummer. They get a couple, they go through a couple of bass players, and they settle on the three-piece band that we got here, Mahogany Rush. In 1971, they played a pop festival at the Montreal Expo. They are from Montreal. That's their home base, and that exposure led to the recording of their first single called Buddy.
Northern Exposure.
Yes. Oh, nice. And a subsequent album called Maxume, which is their debut record.
Great record.
It was on a kind of a, well, I don't know if it's small, but it's a Canadian Westbound Records.
It's small, but it's girthy.
You said that, and I just moved my finger along my iPad and lost my place. It's like a spit take.
You're reading your email now.
Yeah. So then they did two more records. They have Child of the Novelty and Stray Judiverse. Now, here's my thing about Frank Marino and Mahogany Rush. It's like, at this point, those first three records, those are very Hendrix sounding.
Very, almost too much.
Too much for me. They get less as they go. So by the time you're on the third album, Strange Universe, it's a little more palatable. But man, Maxum and really a lot of Child of the Novelty is just too much. I mean, like, it's a Greta Van Fleet pastiche type of deal.
They've actually held up, surprisingly.
I like them.
I think they're great records. I do. But at the time, I just went, nope. Nope,
a lot
nope,
of
nope,
people
nope,
did,
nope.
Yeah.
And so I really kind of bypassed them. I'm actually having fun going back and getting them.
Yeah, I think...
kind of like, you know, what you're doing.
Exactly. It's been fun to get them all, and it's like... And you put them on, and it's a place. It's like this vibe. You're like, I like it here. Yeah. I don't want to hear Hendrix do this. I'd rather hear someone else do it.
Well,
so.
Hendrix wore out all his shit, so let's go to this guy. Yeah. What's he got?
Yeah, exactly.
I was kind of like, all right, I'm good now. And I'm not as personally attached to Hendrix's music as I was back then. It's not as insulting to me in a weird way. Lack of better word, you know, but...
Yeah.
It's just like, come on, dude. And now it's like, it held up. It's pretty cool.
It's actually not bad. You think if he's pretty young at the time, too, it's kind of interesting, and he's... Yeah, so, I mean, I would definitely encourage people to, if they're liking what I'm going to play here, which is the fourth album, I mean, you can go back and get those early ones.
Little
they're
Wing.
Fun.
You're going to play Little Wing?
Yeah, it's called, it's called Two Rolling Stones.
Yes.
I'm singing Robin Trower songs because he's another Hendrix-y clony guy. Yeah. So, anyway, so they had this this big, strong following in Detroit, Michigan, of course, and they played Cobo Hall.
Motown.
Yeah. So Frank says we were really getting off the ground in the United States, and suddenly there was a lot of confusion. The Strange Universe album was doing so well that our record company decided to release our first two records which they had bought from that smallish label but girthy label in Canada.
See, it performed when it needed to.
And he's like, neither one of them were recorded very well, and since they had never been released in the States, people thought they were new. It was not the kind of situation they wanted, so it was confusing
I like
the market.
Them now. Their new shit sucks, right?
Yeah, that would suck if someone bought Maxum after Strange Universe.
How many record labels have done that to different bands? How many stories like that have we told in here about that?
But there's a happy ending here, at least for the 1970s era. He apparently befriended David Krebs of Lieber and Krebs Management. I guess he knew Krebs during the gigs at Cobo Hall in Detroit. And I wasn't sure if Krebs was based out of Detroit. I always thought he was a New York guy. But
I thought he was in New York or even Boston, but maybe New York.
Yeah. So he says, in the end, we decided to start over, and this time with all the right elements. We had Lieber and Krebs managing us. We're now on Columbia Records as the label, and Premier Talent as the talent agent.
Well, that's Aerosmith's label as well. They were on Columbia.
I think it's Aerosmith's everything, right?
Yeah, because Lieber and Krebs manage Aerosmith,
Yep, and so obviously that's when things begin to really take off for him. Although, Mahogany Rush, like Frank, I keep saying Frank Marino and that's what it would eventually become, Frank Marino and Mahogany Rush, but they never really had that headliner status. You know, they were a hot live band, but they just never really broke through as a big headliner,
no,
I don't think.
No, and again, to me, the whole stigma was that it's just too Hendrix-y for me.
Yeah.
And I just, you know. But here's they were good. You knew they were good. You're like, that's good. It rocks and all that shit.
So I think this would be a good starting point album, Mahogany Rush 4, because it is sort of, as we just talked about, like now they've got, they did start over. They kind of press a reset button. And I think by this time, Marino's a little bit older, and he's now experimenting with some synth. He often doubles the bass lines on a Moog Simplifier, you know?
Oh, wow.
And it's got this really cool sound, and it gets even spacier and really cool like that. I'm going to play a very good example of that in a song called Dragonfly, which is killer on this album, but... if you look up a live version of it, they crush it live. It's really, really pretty amazing.
I just picked up a live. Might have been the same record.
Oh, Frank Marino live.
Yeah,
yeah. That's it's got Dragonfly on it.
Yeah,
yeah. It's really good. But I played that record. I wanted to hear the studio version. It's just really cool atmosphere. Of course, there's Hendrix-y stuff in there, but really, this is to me like Hendrix is just now a mere piece of the puzzle rather than the totality of it, like Maxum is a real pastiche of Hendrix.
It really is, yeah.
So the next album is also great too, World Anthem, and the one after that, Tales from the Unexpected, are the three that you definitely need to check out. I've been talking to a good buddy of ours, that's Greg Chason, who was in a band called Badlands back in the late 80s and early 90s.
Mm-hmm. That was Greg.
Greg is doing great.
He's always awesome.
He is yes. tough as nails.
Fun fucking guy to be around.
We love our Greg Chason here. He battled through cancer, beat its ass. Cancer ran from Greg Chason. It is like bowing, going, 1,000 pardons.
Chuck Norris runs from Greg Chason.
Yeah. So I was sitting in his office there at Bizarre Guitar. He runs a guitar store here and stuff now. And we were talking about bands and talking about Frumpy and talking about all these other bands. Sweat Hog, he said I need to check out Sweat Hog.
Okay.
And I go, where are you at with Mahogany Rush? Because I've been on this kick all week, you know, like listening to Mahogany Rush over. And he's like, he comes down on them like we do. Like the first three records are okay, but it's too Hendrixy, but the middle period is great, like where it's moving away. Now, in Badlands back in the day was the guitarist Jakey Lee that played with Ozzy and stuff. And so he had a story.
Catman.
He had a story. Goes,
Eric Singer.
We all met. And Eric Singer. Yeah. We all met Frank Marino back in the on our first tour. And we were in Montreal. And all of a sudden after the gig, Frank Marino turns up at the door and says, I'd like to come in and meet you guys. And Jakey Lee is a huge fan of Frank Marino, as a lot of guitarists from Jake's era are huge Frank Marino fans. I think of the dude from Tesla as well. Frank Hannon. From Tesla has mentioned Frank Marino. And Jake apparently mentioned Frank Marino in some interview. And Frank got wind of it. And he went to the gig and wanted to meet Jake and just to thank him for, hey, thanks for mentioning me in the article, because Jake was the hot guitar player, and Frank was 10 years past his real heavy, heavy hitting time.
Frank, yeah.
So I thought that was a really cool story that he would go out of his way just to, like, I'd like to meet Jakey Lee because he said something about me, you know.
That's very cool.
So Frank ended up getting out of the music business around that time and finally resurfaced in like in 2000 or something, but thanks to a website in there. And he popped on the website. Remember this story I talked about it one time?
Yeah.
He popped on there on some message board like, hi, I'm Frank. And everybody's like, bullshit. You know, and he's like, no, seriously, it's me. And, you know, and he's answering really technical questions. And I'm like, holy shit, it is Frank Marino. Where'd he go? Where have you been for 10 years? And he just basically was out of the business and just laying low.
I got a thumbs up from Ian Hunter. Do you see that?
Yeah, I saw that.
Like on his personal fucking,
on Facebook.
Yeah.
What? Apropos of nothing, but some dude, thanks for sharing.
Some chick named Susan. In her underwear.
Yeah, that's running it.
Yeah.
All right, well, Dragonfly by Mahogany Rush. Side 2, track 1, AD from 1976. I'm just in love with these guys. I love Frank Marino's guitar playing, and the atmosphere of this record is just, it's so cool and groovy. I'm sure you're going to dig it.
Of waves. So some distant time and space.
Yeah, man.
Right?
That's a little Mahogany Rush from Four. Dragonfly. I want to give a shout out to the rhythm section. They are great.
Killing
on this album and all the other Mahogany Rush albums for that matter. Paul Harwood on bass and Jimmy Ayoub on drums and percussion.
A little taste of funk. Had that
very funky
mid-70s funk thing funky. Going down.
I loved how the keyboard kind of swells in the verse. It just sort of swells and comes back. You know they performed that. Join the mix.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They had to do it every time.
All hands, like, you know, people reaching over, you know. There's five people at the mixing board.
Yeah.
And you're reaching way over to get the cowbell, and the dude, his left, it's like a game of Twister, except on a mixing console, you know. Arms everywhere. Arms akimbo.
You picked up a little time signature challenge thing in that song.
I did, yeah. When they did that, the turnaround. It was a little 9/8 thing going on in there.
1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 4. Yeah, go back and count that. Counters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love those guys. I've been just on a tear. And I'm going to buy one more. Actually, I checked out an album called Who's Next or What's Next. And I'll get that.
Yeah, it's a Who record. That's a Deep Purple record.
Yes, I believe it is. Yes. All right, what do you got in that mystery box there?
Ryan, it's just insane what happens in this little fucking weird room. I swear to God, Sunny Slope, we're on not an Indian burial ground, but it's like, I think it's this ancient hobo burial ground, the weird, magical, freaky shit, like Hobo Willie was buried beneath this sacred turf or something, you know, Cabooseman Carl was somewhere buried around here, because weird shit happens in this room. Listen, and his dog Bindle. This band was formed in October 1970. It's from Hanover, Germany. It'll mark their second appearance on this senseless waste of cyberspace. Their first and only appearance way, way, way back on episode number 77, you guys.
Wow.
77. The title of that episode was very Peter friendly. It was Shooting Squirrels with Panzers. We're lovely.
I feel
lovely
like I remember voice. That. Did we have a guest on that episode? Steven Seaborg was on.
Seaborg was on that one. Yes, he was. So, Ryan, it's just weird here in this room. Like I say, we got to give credit where credit is due. I got to mention Greg Chiasson.
What?
For exposing us to this amazing band, krautrock, prog, rock and roll, call them what you want. I got Jane.
Oh.
Oh.
I got fucking Jane with me. And you're bringing up Chiasson.
Was it Chiasson or Steven Seaborg?
I thought it was Chiasson.
Oh, I think it was Steven Seaborg.
Oh, was it?
Chiasson got us into many other bands, but I don't think Jane was one of them.
Oh, that was Stepson.
Stepson.
I was thinking that. Okay, so that's the connection with that episode. Whew. Then.
So we're not on a hobo burial ground.
Well, we probably are still. I'm going to get buried here.
You did mention Frank Marino earlier. So
Frank. I'm Frank Morano.
Frank Morano.
So I bought their seventh studio album, Between Heaven and Hell. You know, they went through so many lineup changes. Sorry, Steve Seaborg, about that. Yeah, I thought it was one of those. When Greg Chiasson handed you a stack of records, goes, check these out.
Oh, Left End was in there. So many. Stray Dog was in there.
Maybe I'm thinking about that. There's so many different ones. But the Jane album that Steve brought was unfucking believable. It was a great, great album.
Yeah.
Krautrock, kind of proggy. But like a lot of the bands back then that they were doing, like Frumpy, like different bands, were they'll go through lineup changes. Like, again, we don't need a guitar now. Okay, well, now we do need a guitar. Now we need a male singer. Nope, now we don't. Okay, now we're going to split the vocals. Oh, you know what?
Yeah.
Okay, now we need two guitar players and no synthesizer. And that was the thing back then. So that happened a lot with this band. The weird thing, and another band from Germany at the time who also formed in 1970, did the same thing. So you got Frumpy doing these things, but remember Lucifer's Friend?
Yeah.
A German band. Progressive. You didn't know from one record to the next, who's in the band.
Especially with Lucifer's Friend.
And what record you're going to get. I mean, they went full fucking disco, Lucifer's Friend. So here's this band, you know, and this band, Jane, they go from, they'll go from real heavy prog, synthy prog, to kind of almost Pink Floyd-y,
nice,
ethereal, jammy shit. Because you got the first record, right?
I have. Is it their first? I'm not sure where it is in the lineup.
It might be their second or third.
Yeah.
They made a lot of records, Jane did.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how those 70s sort of krautrock, prog, whatever bands, they went through so many changes. And it's almost like they didn't give a fuck. It's like, yeah, we're going to do this now. We're going to do that now. I mean, I guess they're going, well, we're not getting American distribution anyway.
Might as well keep it in Europe.
We'll just do what the fuck we want to do, and there's an audience for it, because I guess if that's all you get, hey, what's for dinner? Burritos. Can I have soup? No, we have burritos.
Yes, we have no burritos.
Right? I mean, that's kind of, they're going, hey, we're going to put this out. You're going to buy it or you're not going to buy it?
Either you're not going to buy a record today.
Hey, you want music? Listen. Nothing. You want music or what?
Yes, I do want music.
I would take Jimmy Buffett at that point in time. So these guys are putting... come on, listen.
Read a book.
Listen.
Yeah. Watch a movie. Is this a world without music?
Hey, where do we go? Okay. Sorry. So anyway, this is an interesting record. It's number seven in their sort of, well, set list
what
of
year,
records.
What year?
1977.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Of course.
1977. It's called Between Heaven and Hell. It was an interesting time because, well, no, not that.
No. Mod had broken up.
No, no, no. But okay, so there were some founding members, like this guy, Klaus Hess, who was a guitar and Moogist, and this Peter Panka.
Peter Panka.
He was old, but he looked young.
Yes. Oh,
thank you.
Uh-huh. Right, Peter Pan.
Yeah. Anyway, he was a drummer and original lead vocals before he actually put the band Jane proper together.
They demoted. Did he get caught stealing out of the till or what?
They really, you need to lift more things.
Yeah, I'm going to bust you down to drummer so fast it'll make your head spin.
He was getting all the pussy, so they go, we got to keep him busy. make him play drums.
Because drummers don't have any chicks on the road, right?
No. So anyway, and at one point in time, one Matthias Jobs.
Really? Was he in Jane for a minute?
He was in Jane for 1 year, roughly a year. So you could say like 75, 76-ish, that one little year in there. He just joined them for a tour and never recorded with them. Didn't do any records, but yeah. So pre-Scorpions, Matthias Jobs.
Cool. Underrated player.
Absolutely. Dude, I think he's fantastic.
I do too.
He's wonderful. I love his phrasing.
Yep, me too.
Real melodic in the way he plays. But okay, so I'm reading more about this Jane. Now, I picked up two Jane records. Remember the record collector in Bordentown, New Jersey?
That's right.
So when we tour, you know, and the Jane record that Steve Seaborg gave you is freaking great.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you never know what you get. So I asked the guy at the record collector, hey, do you know, what do you got in Jane? He goes, I got a couple. I'm like, bring whatever you got, you know? And he brought me this one, and he brought their third album, Jane 6, their third album.
Yeah.
And that one was real, real synthy. It was like, yeesh.
Probably like 73.
Yeah, but then I think the one you had might have been their
It might have been their second then.
Yeah, it might have been their second. Because I think that's what the first two records were guitar-y.
It was heavy,
they
dark,
went synthy,
guitar-y.
And yeah. So they went these other places. This one, though, they get back to the guitar thing. So what happened was, currently, this will sum the story up. Currently active, there are three Janes.
Oh, no,
right,
really?
As we speak, yes.
Just Foghat.
I love these stories.
Wishbone Ash.
Yes. So the first Jane remaining is original member, the aforementioned Klaus Hess. And he has a band called Klaus Hess's Mother Jane. And they're continuing to tour and released an album as recently as 2009.
Wow.
So now the second Jane's interesting. It starts to get really cool. So Jane number two.
It's like the dating game.
Yeah. Okay, this guy Werner Nadolny. Okay, he has Werner Nadolny's Jane. Now Werner was the original sax player. So he goes way back. But then he added keyboards to his credits and stayed in the band for a bit. He's a founding member who came and left. Dude, he split. I'm back in the band. Okay, I quit. I'm back in the band.
Who misses the saxophone? Yeah. Honk, 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 honk.
Right. But so he added keyboards to his credits, though. So he ended up being one of the...
starts playing yakety sax. Who missed me?
One of the 400 keyboard players went on to join Kraftwerk or something. I don't know.
Okay.
So he's a founding member. He was with the band when they started in 70. He stayed through 73, so he's probably on the record you have. Then he quit. He rejoined in 76. He did one record, 1976's Fire, Water, Earth, and Air, and which is totally keyboard proggy. Like, there's nine keyboard players and, like, dude playing maracas or something. It's just like, so sick. But the prog dudes love it. It's all proggy and fucking...
Okay.
Fucking whoa.
I got to hear these on Spotify something.
So now this one, the one I got, this is the record that came right out after it. So, but he immediately quit again after the last record before this one I've got.
Okay.
Okay, so he does the one record, then he rejoins again in 1983.
Who missed my yakety right? sax?
So now remember,
and my pierogi keyboard.
The first Jane is going strong.
Mm-hmm.
Remember Klaus Hess's Mother Jane? They're in gear.
Okay,
they're rocking.
They're doing a good job.
But now you have Warner Nadolny's Jane. They start up in 1983, and he's been going ever since.
Wow.
As
that's wow. got to piss off Carl. What was it, Carl Hess?
Klaus Hess. Okay.
But here's this guy that's come in and out of the band, and he's just going to take the name, and I'm Jane as well.
It gets so much better.
Oh, no.
It gets so much better.
When a third
this
Jane.
This is as good as Dinky Diamond.
Almost. Oh, no.
Yeah. Okay, so now, the third Jane is Peter Panka's Jane.
I was hoping it was going to be Peter Panka.
Peter Panka, of course, if you recall, the original lead vocalist, then relegated drummer, and he did split a lot of lead vocals, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Peter Panka's Jane. Now, Peter Panka was not only the original member, but he stayed in the band, never split from day fucking one.
Nice.
It's his cock-sucking band. Everybody else split. Motherfucker earned it, right?
I agree.
Right? I mean, and he was the one, right? So, right now, so even he was drumming and lead singing. He fucking, come on, right?
Mm.
So, he's in it from day one. But rock and rollers, they do get old and they do die, Ryan.
Oh, no.
They do die.
Not Peter Panka.
Poor Peter Panka.
Poor Peter Panka.
He went to Never Never Land.
Oh, no.
He died in June of 2007 of lung cancer, sadly at the age of 59. That's my age.
Wow. Yeah. You've outlived Peter Panka.
Yeah, amazing.
By many, many years.
And Dinky Diamond. So now, Peter Panka might have thought he had lost the battle over who is the real Jane, because Peter Panka's Jane, remember, he started...
Mm-hmm.
After all these other shenanigans.
Really, technically never left it.
He never left. So he's really Jane.
Yeah.
Everybody else left and formed my
Jane.
Yeah, my Jane. And this guy's Jane. And he's Jane, right? But there's all this shit going on. He goes, I will name it Peter Panka's Jane. And so he names it Peter Panka's Jane. So in June 2007, he dies of lung cancer, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now, will the real Jane please stand up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Fear not fearers, for check this out. The deceased Peter Panka is immediately replaced on drums by Fritz Randau. And so it is that Peter Panka's Jane, under the name Peter Panka's Jane, is still touring and bearing his name, and he's 2 years dead. And they put out an album a year after he died, Peter Panka's Jane.
Wow.
A brand new studio album. And check this out. The second Jane, that Warner Nadolny guy.
Yeah.
Because Peter Panka had died, he came back and played keyboards on it.
What? What the hell is going on with the Janes?
Fucking total dick. he's dead? Yeah, I'll come and do that. Yeah,
as long as he's not going to be there. Oh, he's quite dead.
Oh, dude, I'm reading this and going, no.
Wow.
Three Janes.
That's really.
Three Janes and the main guy's dead. And he's the real Jane.
I think it's nice that they keep his name in their Jane band.
Well, yeah.
I guess.
Awesome. So anyway, I've got the record Between Heaven and Hell came out in 1977 on Ryan, what record label?
Brain or Billingsgate.
Brain.
Yeah.
Too much weird shit. See? Hobo yeah. Burial Ground. I'm going to play a song called Twilight. It's a real cool thing. There's some vocals in there, and they're horrible.
Oh, no.
Horrible. Yeah, you know, they're singing in English badly.
Is it Peter Panka?
I think it's Peter Panka.
Okay.
Yeah, Peter Pancake. But the thing is, it's got that Pink Floydian kind of space riff thing. It starts off in this weird kind of
Liz
poppy mode. It's a little kind of got a cooler edge than Floyd does. Now, we're not talking about that spacey, real super slow stuff. It kind of starts out with it's German people trying to speak English, so it sounds a little weird. The vocals are a little awkward, but it goes into this really cool jam, and it's not jammy, if you know what I mean. There's a great riff, it's melodic guitar, and it just kind of
sounds like you got some space rock there.
I would put it there. I'd put it right along Lonesome Crow or something to that effect.
Okay.
You know? So here we go. We're going to play Jane from Heaven and Hell, and let's go ahead and drop the needle, Ryan, on Twilight, side two, track one.
There was
Jane.
There was something appealing about that, even though it really, I think you said it, like, it's, they're not really blowing you away.
They're not blowing you away. It's like Neil Young with a keyboard, like, yeah, like that same chord pattern. But if there's something cool about it.
Yeah,
it's melodic. It stays. It keeps you in. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. And but again, they're not going and just kicking you right in the nutsack. It just
no,
kind of is what it is. But it's really cool. It's very. I don't know. It's a good record.
I liked it.
I would have liked to play side one, but side one is totally the title track. Yeah, it's Supper's Ready, essentially.
I noticed it was just one song on side one.
That rocks balls, man. It's really cool. You know, it goes all these different places, but it's still, there's some really, really, really cool places and patterns where it goes. But yeah, Jane, the album's called Between Heaven and Hell. Came out in 1977 on Brain Records. That was produced by Jane, and that song was written by Jane. Which Jane? We don't know.
It's up for debate.
But hey, goodbye to Jane. Ryan, what do you got?
Oh, nice. Well, I got an album that I'm very pleased to have acquired in recent weeks. It's a man who is no stranger to the Shabby Road Record Show, that is for sure. My whole theme here tonight has become sort of spacey sounding rock, and I had a kind of a spacey sounding track, and then I'm basically bringing an album by a bona fide alien, AD, man from outer space.
You brought the Ace, man. You brought Ace, did you? Oh, what?
No, I brought David Bowie.
Oh.
The other famous alien.
The other alien guy.
But I got something very cool. I am, this is an album that was put out a few years ago. This is David Bowie live. From Nassau Coliseum.
I believe it's called Live.
He lives Nassau Coliseum, 1976.
What is that?
This is recorded during the Station to Station tour, the Thin White Duke tour.
What the Everlove? Is that a Record Store Day thing?
No, this was put out, first released in September of 2010.
Doing, everything's one word?
Yeah, just like the Station to Station album. First released in September 2010 as part of a special deluxe edition of Station to Station, which I got to admit, that album has really grown on me. Station to Station is becoming one of my favorite Bowie records because of what it is, when it is. A couple months, maybe about a month ago, we were talking about the Berlin period, and it's David and Iggy and all that stuff. So just prior to that sort of Low and Heroes, those albums that Bowie did, but he also worked on The Idiot, which is one of the ones I brought by Iggy Pop. Before he did that, he was still living in America. He does Station to Station, and arguably the height of his cocaine intake.
All right.
Yeah, and living in America and touring on Station to Station, which is like a very dark album that is weird and desperate, and there's something compelling about that record that I've just fallen in love with. It's always been something I've liked, but like in recent times, like it's like you really start to get it. You know, of course, we're fans of the glam period, but to me, like I've really, the stuff I reach for now, because I've lived with that glam stuff for so long and heard it a million times, is Station to Station through Lodger.
Well,
or Scary Monsters.
He is tapping a lot into the older stuff, though. I mean, you got Suffragette City.
Uh-huh.
You've got Queen Bitch.
Yeah.
You got Waiting for the Man.
Yeah,
on
it's a
there,
great
which
set
is interesting.
List.
You got Life on Mars, 5 years, Panic in Detroit, Changes. Fucking Diamond Dogs, Rebel Yebel, and you got Gene Genie on that.
Yeah, it's
so,
a great
set list.
So, I
mean, he is tapping into the older stuff, though.
And if you're a fan of the Station to Station record like I am, you've got the title track, you've got Word on a Wing, which is gorgeous, and the song I'm going to play is Stay, which is a freaking smoldering hot track on this album. Now, like I said, we're big fans of the glam era, and we're fans of the Spiders from Mars, Mick Ronson, Woody Woodmansey, and Trevor Boulder, and Mike Garson. Now, those guys, that's the number one band, and it shall remain that forever.
Of course.
But if those guys didn't exist playing with Bowie in the early 70s, the band he has on this record, on this tour, the Station to Station, Isolar Tour, actually, is what it was called, this band would be their the finest group of musicians, in my opinion, that he put together, at least the hardest rocking.
Well, that brings up a point. If you notice, my brow is furled, and I'm searching through this record. There's not a drop of ink mentions anyone in this band on here. There are no credits.
Yeah, there's nothing there. Yeah,
this album
no
should
credits.
Be called David Bowie. Fuck those other guys. What's going on? It doesn't even say who produced it.
Yeah, there's no info on it. Literally, on this vinyl pressing. Now, is it somewhere else on the deluxe edition of Station to Station? Yeah, because the credits are out there. But I was a little disappointed that there wasn't an insert in this album.
Sure,
which I paid $30 for. It's a double live album. But I want to run down the band, of course. So we got Bowie. His longtime musical director and guitarist, Carlos Alomar.
Yeah.
Dennis Davis is on the drums. Tony Kaye.
Oh.
From Yes. Early Yes is on keyboards. George Murray is on bass. And a guy called Stacy Hayden on guitar.
Don't know that.
That's the story of this album. He's the lead guitarist on this album. And the band is just great. And they are having a blast. Both guitar players have some phasers on. It's so 1976. It feels like, you mentioned Lou Reed's Rock and Roll Animal a minute ago. I think we were off air, but it feels like that because there's a lot of phasers on the guitars in 1975, 76.
Why don't you stomp on that box? It makes a lovely sound.
So here's the story of Stacy Hayden. In January of 1976, they're getting ready to start the tour for the Station to Station album
He's in the States, right? Am I wrong?
He's living in the States.
Yeah, okay, right.
They do the tour of America, right. North America first, and then they go over to Europe.
Right, okay.
Like, about a month and a half prior to the first show, I guess Earl Slick and Bowie could not come to terms on a contract, and that was that. He's like, I'm not doing it, so you're going to need to find somebody else. And so, at the time, Bowie and band were in Jamaica, renting Keith Richards' house, well, which I'm sure has a million stories.
They were just rummaging through it for coke.
And when,
fleeting, and crawling on the rug.
Keith Richards is in a coconut tree somewhere.
Oh, geez, I'm hurt.
Oh, yeah, he's fallen out of that tree again.
How you doing now, Mick?
It must be 8:30. He does it every day at 8:30. But a roadie who was there helping them get their gear set up and stuff, knew Stacy up there in his home country of Canada. He popped in a tape of Stacy playing a Red Wing shoe commercial. And I know a guy. He's good. You could fly him down. He could do the gig. And so Bowie's manager calls Stacy. You know, the roadie had the number. Call Stacy at his girlfriend's house in Toronto at like 2 a.m. in the morning. They thought it was a prank call, and she hung up the phone. And
wow.
It's like, hello, I'm the manager of David. I don't know if it was Tony DeFreeze at the point or whatever, but it's like at 2 in the morning, and then it's like hung up, and then they called right back, and apparently it's legit. And so then an Air Canada ticket arrived for them to leave at noon the next day.
No shit.
It's like, just go to the airport, grab your guitar, and go. And he had never been south of Ohio in his entire life, and here he is going to Keith Richards' house in Jamaica.
So he's got, like, fur coat, and he's got, you know, mucklucks.
He doesn't know what to...
Sounds like a
fishing
movie.
Fishing boots. Yeah. He's got...
So then he gets there, and he auditions in the living room on a Fender Twin, and he played a Telecaster with no pedals or nothing, he didn't know any of the songs. So it's like, we're starting with Station to Station. He's like, well, what in the world is that? Never heard it.
Yeah, wow.
So just play some lead over it. And he got the gig somehow. Wow. I don't know if they were just desperate or they were just like, fuck it. Let's just go. He tours. He does the entire tour. And he played. The last time Stacy played with Bowie was actually a couple years later in 1979. With Bowie on Saturday Night Live during Heroes era kind of stuff.
Oh, no shit. Yeah. I remember that.
Or he might have been on Lodger or something. I can't remember. But and then he toured with Iggy Pop. And After that tour was over, he never played on stage again. He's done.
You know why? Because he was crap, man. He was like, crap. I can't do you know, this the guy anymore. Was always all fly. You know, I'm the star. I'm the star. And he, you know, I'm like singing lead.
Iggy.
And he's like doing chords, man. And like when I'm singing lead and you're doing chords, he would come to the front of the stage, you know, and I'm like,
did he have his phaser pedal? Iggy?
I don't know what. There was some kind of weird noise, man, and it was just not, I don't know.
Yeah, that's just an amazing story. So he did this one tour. No one knows who he is. So there's no Wikipedia page for him or nothing. I'm like, who is this guy? And I found
some,
these articles.
Some dude.
I found articles after Bowie's death where they found him in Canada, you know, like Toronto Star or whatever, found him and said, well, this guy knew Bowie very well, and they were friends. Matter of fact, later in like 2008, 2009, he played at the Shrine Auditorium. I'm assuming that's in Canada. And he didn't tell Bowie he was coming, but he called someone he knew in the crew and was like, hey, I'm here. Maybe Bowie would like to see me. And he went back there,
nope.
And he said, yeah, who?
Hey. Yeah, right.
I have no recollection of that.
You're that Canadian.
That man. So, but he goes backstage, and he's amidst all these L.A. celebrities. Oh yeah, so it was in L.A., the Shrine Auditorium.
Yeah.
Including the mayor of L.A. was there and shit. But Bowie charged past all of those and saw Stacy and leapt onto his lap jubilantly.
No kidding.
I'm like, Stacy.
How you look delicious.
So, yeah.
I could just take a bite.
So, a great story.
It is. That's
and,
good.
And if you're a fan of this era of Bowie, there is a YouTube video. You can see this on YouTube. It's a rehearsal of this touring band, and it's great.
Wow.
You can tell they're having a great time. Bowie flubs the first lyrics, and he's laughing.
Now, money was really tight, though, at that time, as I recall. That was they, you know, they Bowie was selling records and stuff, but there was a lot of old money tied up.
It was
they
weird.
Owed, man. They yeah. owed a lot of cash. I mean, if you knew the whole DeFreeze and mm-hmm. Bowie story, they were maxing out credit cards in every country they possibly could.
Yeah.
When the MasterCard was done, they'd get the Bank AmeriCard. And when the Bank AmeriCard was done, they'd
yeah.
get the, you know, the American Express. And when that was done, they'd...
There was something about this tour that must have held, like, broke them through. Because if you look at the attendance of this tour, it's astonishingly good. Like, these are sold-out shows.
Yeah,
so you're going to hear a sold-out crowd here.
And once he hit because he on the Tower Theater, the David Live era... That was a remnant of what was left of Ziggy's. I mean, he started
yeah.
that, you know, fresh sort
yeah,
of mid tour
yeah.
and all that. So, you know, that was dirt poor. Once the Thin White Duke era hit, then, yeah, that's when he actually
yeah.
started. I think the bills had been paid by then.
I think he was also away from Tony DeFreeze, if not in the process
yeah,
of getting away from that crook.
I think there was definitely a severance of that whole business platform. At that
yeah.
time, which was really, you know, well, same as Kisses.
Yeah.
Really.
So, since to me, Stacy is really one of the stars of this whole proceedings, I'm playing the song Stay, which features his long guitar solo. If you recall, Mick Ronson got such a treat as well during, what was it,
Moon Age
Daydream
yeah.
in the Ziggy Stardust film. It's similar. So, Bowie's back changing his clothes and
yes.
let that guitar player just have it. So, this is Stacy's version of that. And they are just ripping. The band is so damn good, and they're on fire. This
nice.
Is so good.
I'm excited.
A Maestro phase shifter for all you guitar nerds out there. Maestro is the brand that he used, and he got a powerful sound because he was hooked up to 3 100-watt Marshall heads.
Of course.
And he goes, I personally all didn't right. want to use that amplification, but David himself wanted that amplification for me. Oh, you're going to need a bigger... Marshall than that.
You're so good. You need to be so
need to
loud,
be heard
beautifully loud.
All right, so here we go. Stay from Live Nassau Coliseum 76 Parlophone. This came out. This version can be found on Amazon. It's from February of 2017. It does sound really good. So go pick one up. Go to Amazon and pick one up. Click through our banner first. Actually,
yeah,
we'll get a little kickback. Mm-hmm. Bowie pays us 10 cents.
Mm-hmm.
No, not really. But you don't pay anything. So let's drop the needle on it and check out this band. They are shit hot and they're having a blast.
Mm-hmm. something to help me. Hope someone takes after me. There's always a change in the weather. This time I know we could get it together. If you would stay here tonight, that would be crazy tonight. Stay. That's what I meant to say or do something. But what I never say is stay this time. I really meant to so bad this time. For you can never really tell when somebody wants something you want to.
Is that band rocking?
Wow. Dude, yeah. That is a jam.
They were jamming. That was just, everybody in that band was jamming.
Okay, so I'm not going to find that record in the wild. You got to order that fucker, right? I mean, there's no way.
You may find it.
Right?
If you go to a store that loves Bowie. Jeez. It's new enough. I mean, it's 2017, so it'd be in the new section. But totally worth checking out. You can borrow this if you'd like. I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
I just love that period.
But I think what you said, really, the disappointment is there should be some media with that. There should be a booklet or at least a credit sheet.
You have so many great photos.
Or at least print the inner sleeves.
Yeah.
They're just black.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, spill some ink, man. Dave made some dough. Fuck, David Bowie sent me $50,000 check. Remember that?
Yes, I do.
They got money. They didn't even know it. I don't fucking took part of that. And
That was like a merch sale
was
on
a
his
merch
cons-
fuck up. Yeah, yeah. Their merch guy has my name.
Something.
And he's in England, and they wrote a check for the guy for $50,000 flat, $50,000 and 0 cents, 500000.00.
I remember seeing that check, and you're just staring at it, going, "Do you still have it?"
I have it. Yeah, absolutely, I have it.
Yeah,
I have it.
Just try to cash it now.
When it was from Evening Star, and at the time Mick Treadwell was working for Evening Star, so I call Mick, and I go, "Dude, like, I said, I've done some crazy work, but has something I don't know sold a bunch? I mean, what do I? I don't know what to do." He goes, "Well, what's your name, right?" Had my social security number on it.
Yeah, yeah.
He goes, "It's really social, right?" And Mick is as honest as the day is long and a great guy, right?
Yeah.
He's like, "Well, you know, I mean, like, you know, I'll make some calls, you know, but like, it seems like it's your check." And I go, "But Mick, can't be. I mean, unless something like maybe something, who knows, this weird intellectual property that you did somehow,
yeah,
you don't know about that, you know, whatever."
Not bloody
turned
likely.
Out it was an advance for one of his Bowie's tours.
Okay,
$50,000
for merch,
and it had to come to the States because they were having it printed in the States rather than print it in the UK and then ship it.
Oh, so that was like a deposit.
That was a deposit for merch for Bowie's tour that year.
You were just going to take it.
No, I wasn't. No,
I mean,
is,
you would never have done that.
No,
because
you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, if I was just like, it's not my money. And Mick goes, "Well," he goes, you never know. And he goes, "Here's what we do. You know, wait for 2 weeks. Don't cash it. You know, blah, blah, blah." So then he waited, and he calls me and goes, "Oh, Mike, check this out. You're going to love this, you know." There's the story.
Oh, wow. All right. So, Bowie, live Nassau Coliseum 76. What you got? Oh, he's just grinning over here. This is scaring me.
This band's first appearance, Ryan, on this show was way back on number 164. Okay, so it's been a while.
Yeah, that's going back a year or two.
All right. This is New York City's band's.
New York City's band.
New York City band.
Guys, I finally made it to New York City!
Ladies, shut the fuck up!
This is a New York City band's fourth studio album. Fourth studio album. Peaked at number 9 on Billboard. Came out on September 10th, 1975. Peaked at number 9, stayed there for 110 weeks, longest in the band's career.
Good run.
The band's roots can be traced back to 1971. Originally signed with Epic, recorded one album with Epic. They were dropped. It was never released.
We all are all saying what this is. I think I know what this is.
They signed with the new label 2 years later, released 3 studio albums between 74 and 75. Initial sales of all 3 albums were much weaker than hoped for, and the band was struggling to stay afloat.
Mm.
So they say, we should put out a live album. Live album was made in mid-75, but band decided, let's just go back into the studio. The result is Kiss Alive! Here's the deal with this. You know what? I didn't want to tell any stories. Let's play goddamn Black Diamond. Here's what. Check it out. Here's what. No, 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 no. Here, check it out.
Okay.
Remember that security guard outside? Goes a bitch. Look.
What are you talking about?
Mr. Fucking Flasky right here. Right? We're just going to play Black Diamond.
Okay.
Fuck it. I stuck the flask in.
All right.
For the show. We're going to do this. We're going to fucking. Because, dude, you know they haven't played Black Diamond yet. Yeah, I got a flask. Hang on.
All right.
Dude, hang on. Okay, so we're going to smoke. Yeah, here you go.
Are we tailgating before the Kiss concert? Is that what's happening?
They just finished 100,000 years. You know they're going to play Black Diamond, right? Mm. Fucking drink up, right?
That's a.
Right?
That's Jameson in there.
That's Jameson, right? Here you go. Where is he?
Hello.
Yeah. Hello. All right, so, dude, whoa. Check it out.
Uh-huh.
Oh, fuck. Hang on. I crotched a couple of joints.
Oh, my God. Okay. Oh, my God. He's pulling out weed.
I got, dude, I crotched
a couple
of dudes.
Was that taped to your balls?
Yeah.
Jesus. Dude, that's a commitment.
They check everywhere, so yeah. So listen, fuck this. We could tell a bunch of stories about this record. How many Kiss podcasts are there?
400.
We're not one. We're just going to goddamn play Black Diamond and smoke this dupe. All okay. right, ready to go.
All right, yeah, okay. I'm in.
All right. That's my bit. I'm done.
Thank you.
Dude, I am wasted.
Yes, put that flask away. Oh, we're gonna get busted by that security guard.
Lord, man, he gave me the pat down, but I crotched it.
You crotched it.
Woo!
Classic.
Come
Doesn't
on,
get
what
better.
Are you gonna say? I could have gone through this. Oh, and then the record came out, and I. Blah, 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 blah,
it that. Was the game changer.
Let's just play Black Fucking Diamond. Come
it's
on,
bombastic, and just, to hear the cannon fire at the end is
awesome.
It's still great. I mean, okay, so there's a little studio trickery going on, but the experience we were just talking about, you saw him back then, and that's what it felt like.
It did.
I mean, you're seeing everything.
Feeling the heat of the flames.
Just an
literally.
Assault on all your senses.
And the thing is, the only one who had done it before was really, I mean, in a major way, was Alice Cooper.
Sure.
You know, you could say others came before him, you know, whatever. That yes, mm-hmm. there have been. But, I mean, as far as the mass appeal, you know, Alice came and then Kiss came along. And, of course, they were different. They had a new shtick. They had a new mm-hmm. niche. But they were heavy and they were cool and they blew shit up. You know, Alice hung himself and that was awesome, you know? but they blew shit up and I'm like, well, that's both cool.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were still cool at the time. So, yeah, I could have done a long intro on this thing.
But I think that everything's been said about
dude,
Kiss Alive.
Kiss Alive, Black Diamond, come
yeah.
on, what?
Well, thank you for playing it. It's like a record I never reach for. Cause
look at us grinning.
Look how happy we are.
All fucking, yeah, it's like sunshine
we're here. So happy. You know, just I don't pull it out very often, so it's like it's cool to cool to hear it again, you know?
Yeah.
And just for one little snippet, you go, nah, yeah.
Right?
It's still Kiss Alive one. My Bible, we called it back then.
Absolutely.
You
know? Yes. If you don't love that, you don't love rock and roll.
I had
come
the
on,
really. I told a story a long time ago about my friend in fourth grade, Kim Dobbs, and his dad. You may remember watching Gary Numan on Saturday Night Live or whatever. That guy looks like he's dead.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They had Kiss Alive at their house, and they let me borrow it. I took it home, and I recorded it onto a Kmart 90-minute cassette, and that was my version of Kiss Alive until I was 9 or 10 at that time, and that lasted me until I was 13 or 14 when I actually got a original cassette
you
of
know,
it.
And you can talk about, I mean, you think about this. What place that, oh, shit, it's not the turntable. It's not automatic.
Oh, yeah, it's
God,
okay.
It.
We'll get it.
But not only learning their songs, you know, and you know, song structure. And I mean, you learn how to solo to a Kiss song because there's 2-3 chords. But really, the Kiss Alive album, it taught you how to put a show together. You heard the pace of the show, you know,
right.
Even if you had never seen them before, you do this and here's what you do in between songs, much like Jim Dandy.
Yeah.
But, you know, Paul Stanley had fine tuned that art. He was kind of like, OK, at that point in time, Alice Cooper didn't do a lot of, OK, this next song is he didn't do any of that shit.
No,
they musically segued from bit to bit because it was more like a movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Alice Cooper was more like a movie,
yeah.
a horror movie. But where Kiss was like, no, this is a circus and it's live and we could actually, the demon guy could either bite you or bang you.
Or both.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
so
that's a good
real.
Point
it
about
was
the
tangible. It was touchable.
It's
it
one
was,
thing that, yeah, sometimes gets overlooked. That the pacing of this album is tremendous. And
yeah.
you feel it like what a concert should be like. You come out, it's bombastic. In the middle of the concert, there's guitar solos and drum solos and bass solos and
yeah.
stuff. And then the end of it is like a fever pitch by the end of Let Me Go
side
Rock
three,
and Roll.
Yeah, well, side three is the end of it, and they come back. For,
oh, the side
for,
four is
side
all
four
the,
is the encore. Yeah,
yeah. Cold Gin, Let Me Go Rock
oh,
and Roll, Rock
on,
and Roll
right?
All Night. It's
yeah.
just like this fever
it's,
pitch at that point.
It's stupid. It's fucking, it was the greatest thing ever at the time. I mean, seriously, it's literally the greatest thing ever. I mean, I remember it the day it came out. I'm pedaling up to the record store, Empire Music on Veers Mill Road, I believe it was, or Rockville Pike. I can't remember. Route 355. Was that Rockville Pike?
I think it's Rockville Pike.
Yeah. And apparently the promo guy from Casablanca had gotten there that day and gave whoever's managing the store all the coke and said, all the records that are on your wall, take them down, all the posters. And, dude, we parked our little Stingray
like
bikes outside.
The new arrivals section?
Yeah. No, and no, the entire walls, all the walls, as like it was the entire, it was like a Kiss store. Like, remember that old Saturday Night Live, like, Scotch tape store? Uh-huh. What do you sell? Scotch tape.
Yeah.
Well, what do you sell?
Just Lamps.
Kiss Records.
It's, and it was called, like, Just Lamps.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Do you have the just new Kiss. Nazareth? No. We have the new Kiss Alive album.
That's all we've got.
Yeah, it's like that. Wow. And it was truly like that. But I didn't give a fuck because that's what I came to get.
Yeah.
That was a life-changing wow. album for all of us, I think. For a lot of us, I should
yeah,
say.
Yeah, it still yeah. stays
so
with
there
me.
You go. Kiss Alive, fucking Black Diamond.
Boom. All right.
What you going to do?
Well, you can't go out any better than that, AD. So
right.
The mystery boxes are depleted. So we thank you guys very much for hanging out with us. 213 is officially in the books here. And if you enjoyed the stuff tonight that you heard on this podcast, please drop by iTunes and leave us a review. 5 stars or no less than that, please.
Yeah, no, please no.
We're begging. That helps raise the profile of the podcast so more ears get to enjoy it just as much as the next person, if that makes any sense. Probably not, but so thanks. Appreciate it. And let's also say thank you to the Notorious LDB. That's, of course, Liz Damian Brooks, who is running the controls over there in the Chevy Command Center.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Liz, for hanging out.
You're welcome.
When did you see Kiss for the first time?
1978.
Nice.
Did yep. you take your top off for Paul?
1978.
She was a little young.
Jesus.
Oh. Like, no, that was what? The Ted Nugent show.
Yeah, that was.
I was 15.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Take your bra off. Yeah, 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 yeah. 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 Sorry about Joby. That. Were you really?
Yeah.
You're that much younger
Capital
than me.
Center.
Everybody's younger than me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm only 4 years younger than you.
And she's brought with her Sal 5000 over there, making all kinds of racket.
Who is this schmuck? I never heard this voice before.
Mikey is that Mikey? Oh.
That's Mikey.
There we go. Well, as I said, the mystery boxes are, in fact, empty, so it's time for me to travel through the great glazed donut in the sky back to my home planet to tell people what I've learned about Earth. The atmosphere is dank and smelly. It's difficult to breathe. Earthlings that I've encountered imbibe substances that appear to make them forget their deplorable conditions. They spin these discs and gyrate in some primitive histrionics. I'll learn more next week when I come back, but before I go, I'll say eep orp ah-ah to human sample number 1, A.D. Adams.
I believe you were quoting the Jetsons?
Yes.
Absolutely. My hat is off to you, my
yes.
friend. Yes. Brilliant, brilliant. Well, that's that. Nobody died, Ryan.
Nope.
No overdoses. No babies were born, right? Checking with you, Liz, over there. Good to go. And no fisticuffs between Crosby and Nash. So I think we pulled this shit off, right?
Perfect.
And who do we have to thank? You, Shabby Academy. Thanks to Ollie's for lending us your ear holes. Once again, sorry we didn't pull out in time like we promised. I swear to God that wasn't intentional.
Oh.
But hey, now as I look across the room in this smoke-filled facsimile to Cobo Hall, a dank Midwestern concert hall somewhere in the smothering summer of 1975, I can barely make out the shadows of what appears to be my pal, my co-host, and the guy who convinced Rob Halford that, hey, you'd look bitchin' in leather, Ryan McKay. I wish you, sir, a wonderful evening and a rivederci that'll shut the hell up when you tell it to the first time. Good night, everybody.
Oh, wow.
Yay.
I don't remember that conversation with Rob Halford.
Hey, guys. A portion of the Shabby Road Record Show is brought to you by alltheworldsastage.net. For all your bands and company merchandise needs, click on alltheworldsastage.net and never pay screen charges for orders of more than 24 items. There are no PMS or flash charges either. Mention Shabby Road Record Show and you'll receive 10% off on your order. alltheworldsastage.net.